Zendo first holiday benefit fair titled Hello Zen are here this evening. So my name is Miyoko, and it amazes me how these days every time I come there's at least two people that I've never met before and seen before, and it's incredible how if you're just not here virtually all the time that happens, you know. And not only have I not seen you, you've actually become a student, and I've never even met you. So anyway, my name is Miyoko. So I thought tonight I'd kind of maybe speak a little bit about that aspect of practice, which has to do with settling in and just being where we are. Like so many things in Zen, it sounds so simple and probably ultimately is so simple. But you just have this uncanny ability to make things so not simple, so complicated. Really just a lot more difficult ultimately than they need to be. So, you know, I think probably for all of us, obviously I can only truly speak for myself, you know, I think we all tend to speak or choose topics somehow connected to something that we're dealing with, or, you know, some aspect of practice that we're working with. And, you know, for myself, that has been one of the things I've been kind of looking at, particularly right now. You know, I haven't been around, so that is itself something that I've been having to, you know, to some extent look at and deal with for myself. You know, so much of who I am, my regular pattern and routine and sense of myself and how I navigate the, you know, has been, you know, being here at least a couple of times, you know, just being involved with this place on a level at which I really haven't been. And also, the same has been true in my studio. I'm a potter, I'm an artist. And I mean, essentially what I've been dealing with, for those of you who don't know, and I know there's been different things going around about what's been up with me, but really essentially, right in September after Sesshin, my mother had an accident, she fell and she broke her neck. And so that has been essentially demanding that I'm, in a lot of ways, the main caretaker, that I just be involved with that on a level that I heretofore had not been. So really, on the weekends, I am the caretaker, and then, you know, during the week, it's just a lot more involvement for a variety of reasons, and when I'm not doing that, I'm teaching, making a living. So my ability to be here and be in my studio, really, you know, the two things that had been, you could say, my sustenance in a lot of ways, you know, have had to really be on the back burner. And it's been okay, but it has been something that I've had to sort of look at and see. You know, yes, it's okay to not be here because I'm there, and right now this is the main event, this is my practice, there is nothing more important to me than what I'm doing right now. And yet we can spend so much time thinking, really, that in some way we should be someone else or be somewhere else than where we are. You know, that's where the real thing is happening. And somehow I'm missing my life because I'm here and my life really is over there. And I should be someone else because this was what I'm doing, but if I was who I should be, I would be where this other life is. That I'm actually not. And, you know, it's interesting. I mean, our culture has, and when you say it and you kind of take it out of context, it sounds so ridiculous that it's sort of astounding that one could feel that way so deeply, and yet, you know, there we are. And, you know, I think our culture, for sure, although this is not a new condition in the human mind, but certainly, you know, you could say that our culture has really propelled this attitude in this way really of being, that always there's something more somewhere else, something else. We should be endless. And, you know, I could really go on a little tirade about the evils of advertising and the perils of too much shopping and of our sort of constant over-preparing for what may happen to us. But I won't go there, really. Although I have to say, one thing really struck me that I saw, I think it was not this week, but the week before, there was a thing in the Times, you know, about kids having anxiety attacks now because starting in kindergarten, they're like getting stressed out because of all this preparation for what college they're going to get into. And, you know, again, you know, it's like, ha ha, this is so funny. Could this really be true? This is really true. I mean, this, in fact, is what the most educated, privileged people in our culture are going through right now with their children, you know, quote unquote, the future, you know, leaders of, well, this is probably all changing radically, but you know, as things are now, this is in fact really going on. And so you kind of really have to ask yourself, you know, what is this progress and, you know, what are we trying to do as a civilization? And I guess really the question of, you know, what is it that's necessary to live a fulfilled, meaningful life. And, you know, I think for those of us on whatever kind of spiritual path, this has always been a very real and central question. And up to now, I think for those of us who have pointed our lives trying to kind of meet that question, in terms of our relationship to the culture at large, it seemed almost irrelevant and kind of silly and just, you know, it's like, why would you want to be bothered thinking about that when you could be making money and shopping and becoming famous or whatever whatever it is. And more recently, it's starting to become, I'd say, kind of fashionable in a lifestyle, self-improvement sort of way. But I do get the sense that now, considering everything that's going on, it's really going to be kind of the burning question of really civilization and the world at large. And you can kind of feel that shift, I think, happening. You know, all the structures are cracking. Anyway, it's not really where I wanted to go. So let me come back to really, you know, what I think many of us come to Zen practice for, what certainly I came to Zen practice for, was essentially, and I've spoken of this before, but really the expectation and the hope of getting some more peace and ease and relief in my life. And, you know, for a long, long time, you know, I thought the answer to that or the solution to that was that if I practiced hard enough, it would come back to that first sort of paradigm that ultimately I would become another person and have another life. If I was just practicing hard enough, everything would be different. And this other self, this enlightened Buddha, who was no longer Julie, no longer Miyoko, would be this being who never felt pain, who always did and said just the right thing, was always in the right place at the right time, living a life with kind of no problems, you know, where everything felt and looked kind of golden, and maybe even flowers fell from the sky. In a world, really, where nothing bad happens. And, you know, I realize I could be just speaking for myself, and, you know, as embarrassing as it is, I actually did, in fact, and at times, still do, have these kind of expectations, while kind of meanwhile espousing the word, no expectations. So it's just very interesting, you know, how words can sometimes be very tricky things, spoken and particularly unspoken, you know, what we say to ourselves. and often particularly the words around enlightenment and Buddha can be very, very sneaky and very dangerous. And so while in some ways, you know, I can joke about this, there have been times certainly where I became, and I think this can be a real dangerous point in anyone's practice, but one can become really, really, really discouraged and really, really, really self-punishing. I guess really when this whole scenario doesn't pan out how we think it should. When I don't behave or feel the way we think we should. When others don't behave or feel the way we think they should. When the world doesn't manifest or behave the way we think it should. When this happens, you know, it's like our judging, discriminating, and, you know, very often very punishing voice can begin to permeate, and it can permeate without our noticing, and that's really, that's the key point there. And the other big elephant in that picture, aside from that voice, which it's very easy for us to not see as a voice, is this thing of what we think, you know. The way we think we should be, the way we think others should be, the way we think the world should be, you know, what we think so often, this pair of glasses that we all wear that we don't even know that we're wearing, through which we're actually seeing and experiencing everything, you know. All our ideas and our conceptions that we're not even aware we're filtering our whole being through. And since we're not really aware that it's our thinking creating this, we so often and naturally think that it's our thinking that's going to get us out of our suffering, that's going to get out of our bind, you know. It's like if we could only just figure it all out, you know, and understand it. Understand this thing called Zen, understand this thing called ourselves, you know. Figure out life, just, you know. And it's kind of exhausting just saying and in fact thinking about it. But luckily, for all of us who made it to this room, we do in fact have our cushions, and we do have practice. And so perhaps we can just breathe. We can just listen to the quiet, which is always sort of astonishingly more quiet when you're with other people. Feel the sounds. Come into your body. Mine is sweating. My hands are sweating at the moment. And my head is very cool, but my hands are just sweating. Are you sleepy? Are you bored? Curious. But with kindness, that same kind of kindness that we would watch a child or we would watch a dog, we can ask ourselves that. Where am I right now? Just see, listening, wandering, here, maybe we're in the past, maybe we're in the future. But if we maintain our mind of Zazen, we know, in fact, there is no right place to be. There's only where we are, whatever our experience is. That, in fact, is where we are. And we can spend so much time missing where, in fact, we are because we're so busy being concerned with where we think we should be that we don't even know where we are. So we really, 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 really need to maintain this mind of Zazen, to really just allow it all and to see it all. It's interesting because I also teach pottery. I'm a potter. And so often the biggest challenge really I find with students is just actually having the people, you know, just be interested and okay with where they are and what's happening. You know, everybody wants to come in and either have the Demi Moore ghost experience or be sort of making, you know, masterpieces, you know, seriously and absolutely cannot actually just be with what's happening in the process. And so much is happening in the process, but they're too busy, you know, wanting to be sort of like where they think they should be, that, you know, and kind of rushing to get to what they think is in fact the good part, that the good part doesn't ever happen. (Laughs) but when they're actually just with it, there's no part of the whole thing that in fact is not the good part. And I guess the more you practice with anything, the more you realize that in whatever it is that you happen to be practicing. And, you know, in making pots, and I'm sure this is true probably for painting or making whatever kind of art, really, you know, in fact, that there are no mistakes, there's only information. And the more mistakes we make, the more information, in fact, we have. The way we find beauty is, in fact, through what we call mistakes. You know, those are the pieces often that it's more important to keep around, as annoying as they may be to look at. They are the ones that, in fact, move us. You know, in a sense, it's like they lay our path. To what? To reveal often to what we don't even know that we're looking for, you know. Which is, of course, not so unlike our lives. So I just really, really kind of want to offer up that possibility to you of going, really going right into whatever it is that you think should be different, where you feel tight, where you feel challenged, where you feel uncomfortable. Wherever that is, really use your zazen, you know. This is what it's for. And really kind of let it take you, let it guide you, you know. We don't know. And really, really, really be patient. Who knows, maybe there's nothing to understand at the end of the day. But just see. There's that saying, if we already knew where we were going, there'd be no reason to go. What does it feel like to just not know? So if we use our breath and we use our zazen, We can actually go anywhere. Can always, always, always come to the comfort of this moment, no matter what it is. And that's not something that's ever outside us. But maybe it's not something that's ever inside us. But at the end of the day, it's always here. So I basically would just really urge you to go into this moment, which is really, in my experience, the true temple. Wherever you are, and you yourself are always the doorway into that temple. It's nowhere else, ever. So just really go through it. And I wanted to just leave you with this couple of sentences that I read of Dogen's that, I don't know, for some reason they just really hit me, and I don't know what they have to do with what I was speaking about, although I think a lot. You should know that kind speech arises from kind mind, and kind mind from the seed of compassionate mind. You should ponder the fact that kind speech is not just praising the merit of others. It has the power to turn the destiny of the nation. Sanjay.